one takes a look at all the celebration of the day of Tu B'Shvat, so one would think that there must be like a homosecht in Shas, all about Hilchos Tu B'Shvat, about how you have a Seder on Tu B'Shvat, how you plant trees, how you say Shechanah. There must be so much to talk about in Shulchan Aruch. And then when you realize you start to look in Shulchan Aruch for the halachas of Tu B'Shvat, so you realize that there's nothing there. There's one half sif in the end of Hilchos Tachanun, where the Shulchan Aruch talks about which days we recite Tachanun, which days we don't recite Tachanun. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that there are certain days during the year which are not quite Yom Tovim in the classic sense of the word, but are a little bit special, a little bit unique. And those days, there's a custom not to say Tachanun. So one of those days is Tu B'Shvat. My high, what's so special about Tu B'Shvat? So the Shulchan Aruch refers you to the Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, where the Mishnah speaks about the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilonos, what exactly that means, what the context of that is maybe we'll touch on a little bit more as we go on, but I want to focus a little bit more on Tu B'Shvat L'maisa L'maisa for us. So what does Tu B'Shvat mean? If all these Siddurim and all kind of other things are nice, and many of them are Pi-Kabbalah, but just in terms of the halachic universe, some of you have heard Shirim from me in the past, know, so we try to keep in this world. So in this world, in Olam Hazeh, what exactly are some of the halachas that we should be aware of in terms of Tu B'Shvat? So I thought, even though Tu B'Shvat is not quite this week, it's next week, but it's the closest Yom Yom that we have. So let's try just to get a little bit of a better understanding of the halacha of some things which are relevant for us, and then get to branch out a little bit to other shailas as well. The Mishnah Berurah quotes on that one statement of the Shulchan Aruch that we don't say Tachanun to B'Shvat. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a custom that he says existed in the Ashkenazi communities, exists in the Sephardic communities also, perhaps even more so. The Mishnah Berurah writes that there is a custom in the Ashkenazi communities to eat a lot of fruit on Tu B'Shvat. That's what it says in the Mishnah Berurah. Such a custom exists. Again, the days of the Mishnah Berurah in Radin, in Poland, so they probably didn't have access to all the different kinds of fruit that we have, but there was such a custom to remember a little bit that Tu B'Shvat is supposed to remind us of the fact that it's a Rosh Hashanah Le'ilonos. So there is such a custom, there was such a custom, and there remains such a custom ad hayom hazeh. So this custom of eating a lot of fruit, or particularly trying to eat quote-unquote new fruit on Tu B'Shvat, has opened up for us a whole series of halachic questions. And the first halachic question that we have to deal with is the notion of Shechiyanu on new fruit. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that there are a whole series of different occasions when we recite Shechiyanu. We're usually familiar with the recitation of Shechiyanu on Yomim Tovim, which the Gemara tells us is an absolute obligation. Well, we recite Shechiyanu when we perform certain mitzvahs for the first time during the year, first time we blow shofar, first time we light Hanukkah candles, first time we read the Megillah. So we recite Shechiyanu. In addition to the Shechiyanu, which is associated with the calendar, there is Shechiyanu which takes place in terms of new events. A person is involved in something for the first time during the year, or the first time in a long time, one also recites Shechiyanu. And two things that the Gemara singles out are, if a person sees new fruit, new season of fruit, or if a person wears new clothing. These are times of joy, these are times of excitement, and as such, one is supposed to recite the Shechiyanu. So if so, what a perfect time, what a beautiful time to recite the Shechiyanu on new fruit. On Tu B'Shvat, lamalo, we're going to eat new fruit anyway, so we might as well get some fruit we haven't eaten in a long time, and recite Shechiyanu. Well, not so simple, not so fast. Even though there are many people who do this, this is a very, very questionable custom for the following reason. That if one looks at the Gemara, when the Gemara discusses Shechiyanu on new fruit, you get the impression that it's a new season. It means the fruit hasn't been available in a long time. Like in the olden days, so a person planted his trees, and every year he had a seasonal crop, and he hasn't seen the fruit for months and months. He hasn't seen the fruit in a whole year already. So he's so excited. The first time he sees a new orange, he hasn't eaten an orange in a year. Wow, this is exciting. Whereas today, so one can argue that whole concept doesn't exist anymore. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes this way in the Tshuva, that to say Shechiyanu on a new fruit today is a little bit shaky. What are you so excited about? It means you just ate a plum. You haven't eaten a plum since when? Since yesterday. You haven't eaten a plum since last week. And even if you personally haven't eaten a plum in 6 months, you can go into any fruit store anywhere in America and buy any fruit whatsoever, fruit that the Mishnah Berurah never would have dreamt of eating in his entire lifetime. You can get it every single day. It's out of season. There's no such thing as out of season in America. You pay a few more pennies, everything is in season. So Ramosha says, what kind of new fruit is that? The whole thing doesn't make any sense. The whole concept of a new fruit doesn't really apply in this manner. So that's, you know, that takes a little bit of the oomph. You know, since we were in first grade, we all know you say Shechiyanu on Tu B'Shvat. Not so simple. According to this understanding, it's very, very shaky whether one would say Shechiyanu B'Chlal on new fruit. It's interesting. The same idea that we're not so sure that we recite Shechiyanu on new fruit today because of the way society has changed, this may also address the Shechiyanu on new clothing. The Gemara and Maseches Brachos lumps together these two things. So there are some poskim who suggested, Rabbi Soloveitchik was suggested, that maybe we shouldn't recite Shechiyanu on new clothing today. Why not? Who's excited about new clothing? When was the last time? You know, in the olden days, a person bought a suit. If you were lucky, you were really, really lucky, a person got a suit for his bar mitzvah. And then he was very, very lucky. He got a suit by his chassid. And then he was very, very lucky. Maybe when he married off his first child, he got a new suit. But otherwise, it was bizman hazeh, especially those of us who live in New Jersey. So we live next to Sims. So yeah, Sims bash. Every shade of a chavishi, there's another bash. So that's a simcha. That's something new. That's something exciting. Yeah, that's not enough to warrant the recitation of Shekhi. So if you put together what Rav Moshe said about the new fruit, and you put it together what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about the new clothing, so you end up, you have to wait till Rosh Hashanah till you can say Shechianu. It means there's no Shechianu Bizman Hazeh. There's no Shechianu neither on the fruit nor on the clothing. I'm not saying everybody is bound, but these two psalkim, but these are two interesting insights that the contemporary poskim have given us, and the Chor makes a lot of sense, because Shechianu is a bracha that's basically excitement oriented, and a lot of the excitement doesn't really exist Bizman Hazeh. It's interesting that there is a custom many of you are familiar with on Rosh Hashanah, but on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, there's somewhat of a question about the recitation of Shechianu, because the second day of Rosh Hashanah is what we call Yom Arichta. It's considered to be like an extension of the first day. So if you already said Shechianu yesterday, so what are you saying today? It's the same day. So there were some opinions that said you don't say Shechianu the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So we happen not to paskin that way. We happen to paskin that you do say Shechianu even on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But since there was a question about it, so there was a custom that developed that on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, you put a new fruit on the table. A lot of people get confused. They think that every yontif you have to have a new fruit on the table. Every second night you have to. It's not true. It's only in Rosh Hashanah there's a minhag to have a new fruit on the table in order to avoid this questionable Shechianu. Problem is, if there's no Shechianu on new fruit in America, then you don't really accomplish all that much by putting the new fruit. And that's the minhag. The minhag is we also put a new fruit, even though we're litvak and we're misnagdim and we don't really think you say Shechianu anyway, bizman hazeh. But no, that's what our great grandparents did. They put new fruit on the table in Rosh Hashanah, so we do it also. But be'ikar mikra din, one doesn't really have to say Shechianu on a new fruit, again, according to those who follow the opinion of Rav Moshe. Parenthetically, I once got into big trouble because of the Shechianu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. There are opinions that maintain that you don't say Shechianu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and according to that opinion, you wouldn't say Shechianu on Tekiyah Shofar on the second day of Rosh Hashanah either, because it's basically just a continuation of the old day. So most shuls have the custom of saying Shechianu, but there are some who don't. The Yekis, particularly in Breuers, so the German minhag, is that they don't say Shechianu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. How do I know this? Because for a couple of years, and if you read it on the bio, it's probably in the bio somewhere, there was the Rabbi in Paramus, of KJ in Paramus for a couple of years. So it was a shul that had many Yekishim and Hakim. So one of them in Hakim is that they didn't say Shechianu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But since there were a lot of non-yekas in the shul, so they wanted to make everybody happy. So they had a very strange minhag. The minhag predated me. I never would have instituted such a minhag. But the minhag was that after the Baal Tekeh would say L'shma Kol Shofar on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, he would stop. And then whoever wanted to say their own private Shechianu for 2 seconds, they could say it. Whoever didn't want to, didn't say it. It was a private. Each person could make their own Shechianu if they wanted to. That was the meaning in the shul. So good. So nobody knew what I was doing. I personally used to say Shechianu at that moment of silence. But nobody knew what I was doing. I wanted no reason to start a machlokes on anybody. So one year, my wife walked into shul a little bit late, and she missed the brachas of Tekiyah Shofar. So at that time, my daughter was about 3 or 4 years old. So my daughter comes spatzering in, like you know, right before Shmoneh Esrei of Musaf, on the top of her lungs. Ima wants to know whether she's supposed to make the bracha on the shofar. So that's already a lomda shashayla. A woman's patur from Tekiyah Shofar because she volunteered a bracha. Rabbi Natam and Ram. So you're not allowed to talk at that time. So I couldn't explain. I couldn't say what to eat. So I just nodded. Tell her. Yeah. She should say the bracha. Good. So my daughter runs back to Yevzah Snashim. 30 seconds later, she comes back on the top of her lungs again. Ima wants to know if she's supposed to say Shechianu. And this was the second day of Rosh Hashanah. All eyes turned on the rabbi. This is when I was going to show my true colors. Am I a real Yekka, right to be the rabbi of KJ, or am I a traitor and I'm part of the old, the other school? So, quiet, silence, and shul. I gave the nod. So half the shul thumbs up and the other half of the shul thumbs down. So we stay away from the Shechianu shalas. They become very, very politicized. Anyway, getting back to the story. So there was such a minhag to say Shechianu on Tu B'Shvat. Those who do it. Those who don't do it, don't do it. But the minhag is still to eat fruit. It's interesting, the poskim discuss about if a person really wants to say Shechianu on a new fruit, are there any types of new fruit that one is not permitted to recite Shechianu on? So the Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that he thinks that one should not recite Shechianu on a fruit that was brought about the Isser, a fruit that wasn't supposed to be produced in the first place. What do you mean a fruit was brought about the Isser? It's kilayim. The halacha is that one is not permitted to graft trees. Let's say you want to cross a peach with an apricot. Let's say you had a nectarine, if I'm not mistaken, right? So a peach with an apricot, you're not allowed to do that. So the halacha is you're allowed to eat the fruit. There's nothing wrong with eating nectarines. It's mutl lechatchil to eat nectarines. You make a bracha bar praise on a nectarine. For Ramesha had problems when saying shechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'kiyanu. Thank you, Rav Avraham, for the wonderful opportunity to eat something that you yourself, that you, the Torah Kedosha, said you're not allowed to do. And according to some opinions, even non-Jews are not allowed to do. It's called Hakavas Ilan, this type of kilayim. So Rav Moshe said he thinks he should find another fruit for your shechiyanu. Stay away from the nectarines. So anyway, most of us eat nectarines all the time anyway. I don't know whether this always qualifies as a shechiyanu fruit. But again, so there's a minute that some people have of making shechiyanu and others don't follow this custom in America Bizman Hazeh. But even those who don't recite shechiyanu do have the minhag of eating a lot of new fruit. We try to eat whatever fruit. I make a nice platter of fruit whenever we can. So there is a minhag that even though the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote this, but many of us have the custom of looking for fruit dafka which come from the Shiva Saminim. Again, there's no real reason for this except Al Chavivus of Eretz Yisrael. We want to demonstrate that love and concerning the Shiva Saminim. So that's become the minhag Bizman Hazeh. And many people do that. They try to eat as many of the Shiva Saminim as they can. So when you eat Shiva Saminim, that's a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. You just have to be careful because it gets very complicated in terms of Hilchas Brachos. What's so complicated about it in terms of Hilchas Brachos? You make a bar for eight of the Shiva Saminim. Well, it depends. What's that luck if you have a whole fruit platter in front of you and, see, we really would have been closer to Bishvat. We would have had fruit platters, not popcorn. But if you have a whole fruit platter in front of you, you have some of it are Shiva Saminim, some are not Shiva Saminim. So what bracha do you make? So on the way home from school today, I was driving my kids home. So I told them the good news that I'm packing out tonight. I can't help them with the homework, so they're all left to fend for themselves. So my daughter said, what? Where are you going? So I said, I'm going. That's the same daughter who, she was 3 years old at the time. Now she's 12 years old. So she was very lively then, and she's even more lively now. So she said to me, where are you going? I said, to go say a shiur in Queens. What are you saying a shiur on? So I said, I'm saying a shiur on the halachas of Tu B'Shvat. So she said, that's easy. What are you going to talk about Tu B'Shvat? I'm going to talk about what bracha do you make first when you have a whole platter of fruit. So she said, that's easy. You make a bracha on the Shiva Saminim. So I said, okay, Miss Smarty Pants, what's the halacha if you have two minim in front of you? What if you have dates and raisins on the same plate? To which she responded, raisins? Abba, haven't you been reading all the kashrus alerts for the last 24 hours? Raisins, that's like eating chaz, you can't eat raisins. So anyway, okay, that's off the record. But in the old days, before 24 hours ago when raisins were still mutter, probably still mutter now, but when you had raisins and dates, so what comes first? So what do you do? Are there any halachas that govern the in terms of hilchos brachos and nedarim? Nothing to do with shechiyanu now, just in terms of regular bar per eight, nothing to do with Tu B'Shvat, but the shalak can happen any time of the year. Is there a hierarchy in terms of the correct order of brachos? This used to be a joke in Europe. They used to make this joke that when a prospective father-in-law wanted to see whether the chassan knows how to learn a little bit, so he would sit him down and he would put a plate of fruit in front of him and he would ask him to make a bracha. So if he made the bracha on the right fruit, that was a good sign. If he made the bracha on the wrong fruit, that shows that he didn't know how to learn too well. So don't worry, no bechinas, nothing, no bechinas tonight. So we want to know, what are the dinim? What are the halachas? So the Mishnah in Maseches Brachos records for us in Machlokas HaTanoim which bracha takes kedima if you have different fruit and different kinds of foods. So one Tana maintains that you follow chaviv, you follow whatever fruit you prefer. Because if I happen to like apples more than I like grapes, so even though grapes are from the Shiva Saminim, but for me, apples are more exciting. Apples are more geshmak. So apples are more geshmak. That's a greater hiddur mitzvah for me to recite the bracha on the apple that I like. And the other Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, says no, that there are certain objective criteria in terms of kedima bebrachas, and the objective criteria are those fruit which are more important than others take precedence over the others. So what's considered to be a sign of being more important? If it's from the Shiva Saminim. Shiva Saminim, by definition, Shiva Hem Nishtabcha, Eretz Yisrael, those fruit are considered to be more important than other fruit, and therefore the brachas anen and bar parades should always be recited on those fruits. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you have an apple and a raisin in front of you, and I like the apple better, no, I still make the bar parades on the raisin, and I exempt the, I don't know if they make two bar prints, they make one on the raisin, and that one potters the apple. How do we paskin the halacha? So it's a machlekes, so we showed them how we paskin. In Shulchan Aruch, we paskin like that. We paskin, Shiva Saminim takes precedence. So we paskin that, yes, the halacha is that if you have an apple and raisin, in Ochanam, you make the bracha on the raisin, whether you, it doesn't matter which one you like or better. But what if it gets more complicated and you have a few Shiva Saminim on the table? So then the Gemara says it depends. Then the Gemara says it depends which one comes first in the pasuk. Whichever one comes first, the eretz chitasar, not going to be ha'etz anyway, but from Geffen onwards, any fruit which comes first in the pasuk, in Parshas Ekev about the Shiva Saminim, that will take precedence in terms of Hilchos Brachos. So it sounds pretty simple. Geffen, te'ena, rimon, eretz, eshem, l'dvash. Not so simple. It gets even more complicated. My daughter really wanted to come to the shiur tonight. I told her that she's not, this one she's not invited to. So the Gemara says it gets very complicated. Why does it get complicated? Because the Torah sticks the word Eretz into the Pasuk twice. First it says Eretz Chitas Or, and then the Torah says at the end, Eretz Eisem Rudvash. So whatever is closer to the word Eretz takes precedence. So even though it's closer to the second Eretz, that's more important. It's an important Musar. It's an amazing message that the Gemara is telling us. The closer you get to Eretz Yisrael, the better off you are, the more special you are. If you're hanging on to the word Eretz, you're another foot closer to Eretz Yisrael, so you're more special than the person who's as far away from Eretz Yisrael. It's good Musar Haskel for all of us. But again, it's not a Nefesh Menefesh event right now. There's a Wire Connects event, so we'll get back to the topic. So what would that loch be? The Gemara says, if you have Eretz Zeis Shemen Udvash, let's say you have dates. So dates are dvash. So you have dates and raisins and grapes. Okay, grapes. Raisins are dried out grapes. So what would that loch be? Which one comes first? So I would have said that the raisin comes first because Geffen comes before dvash. The Gemara says, no, dvash comes first. The dates come first because they're closer to the word Eretz than Geffen. So that's Mamash that didn't Shulchan Aruch. That's the loch. So it's not so simple anymore. Now you know why they used to give these bechinas in Europe. So you have to really think. You sit down. You really got to think hard before you recite the bracha. B'di'evid, you yotze, no matter what you do, as long as you make a bar parades on anything, you yotze b'di'evid. But l'maisa, the correct thing to do, the more appropriate demonstration of hidden mitzvah for brachas, is to give kedima, to give precedence to the Shiva Saminim, and particularly even within the Shiva Saminim, to give precedence dafka to the one that's closer to the word Eretz. When a person finishes eating his fruits, and then we all know one recites a bracha corona. So what's the proper bracha corona? So here also we find that the Shiva Saminim are different from other fruit. Regular fruits, so the bracha corona, of course, is the burn of fashas. On the Shiva Saminim, so the bracha corona is a special, unique bracha, which is called the Ein Shalosh, similar to Alamichia, highlighting the significance of Eretz Yisrael. I've been studying with my son. They have brachas bees in this time of year in many of the schools. So they're given these books with pages and pages of stuff about what brachas to make. The problem with all these brachas bee books is there are two big problems. So problem number one is every other food is a machlokes. So the kids are so confused. They have no idea where they're coming or going. And number two is that 3/4 of the time, it's not that they don't know the brachas. They know the brachas. They have no idea what the foods are. So my son is looking at what's the bracha to make on a Napoleon. He never heard of Napoleon. He thought he was the king of France. He didn't know who Napoleon. What's a Napoleon? Baruch Hashem. Then, so it was interesting. I saw in the book, so they crossed out, before they gave the kids the book, they crossed out certain things. So I was looking, I wanted to see what are the things they crossed out. They crossed out vodka, cognac, everything that the kids should know. Crossed out. Under the age of 21, cannot study the bracha bar brachah. Like, so anyway, so Tachas, at the end of the day, so he's learning all these brachas about everything and this and that. And then I noticed that at the end of the book, they have a section for brachas said under strange circumstances. That was the name of the chapter. Brachas said, I was plotting to see what brachas are. So the first bracha was, what bracha do you say when Mashiach comes? I don't know what bracha you make. We'll see. I don't know if you have a precedent for that. Okay, so we'll talk about that. So then there was another. What bracha do you make when you destroy Avodah Zarah? So next time you have to burn a shaitel, so you have to know what bracha to make. And it was very, very, the whole thing was sad. I don't know where they were, what was going on. So whatever it was. So in this book, so they point out, they highlight the fact that you have to know which bracha achrona also. So the general rule for bracha achronas in Paris is very easy. Regular food is burn of fashas. And the Shiva Saminim is, of course, the special bracha of Ala Eitz Valpriya Eitz. What if a person eats a combination of food? A person eats a little bit of Shiva Saminim and a little bit of regular apple. So if you eat grapes and apples, so what bracha achrona do you make? So you do not not make two bracha achronas. You only make one. The bracha achrona of al eitz, or pri eitz, is poter regular fruit also. Let's say b'di'evit, a person goofed and he made it al eitz, or pri eitz. On apples would be, I'd say, because the mice and apples and al eitz, or pri eitz. The bracha is a true bracha. Lechat chil, you should say, burn the fashos on it, but b'di'evit, you would be, I'd say, with an al eitz. And therefore, if you have a combination of different kinds of fruits, so you just combine them all together into one bracha achrona. The bracha achrona for shivas haminim is even more unique if you're actually eating shivas haminim that came from Eretz Yisrael. So many of you are familiar with that. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, even if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, if you're drinking Israeli wine, you're eating Israeli produce, which is shivas haminim, so then the bracha achrona highlights the fact that it came from Eretz Yisrael, and you add on, instead of saying al aretz v'al peiros, they say al aretz v'al peiroseha, or instead of al aretz v'al pri agafen, it's al aretz v'al pri gafna. Somebody was once talking to me, a chaynik, with a bottle of wine in Eretz Yisrael. They were telling me that this wine, is, even though it says Israel on it, it's got a big caramel letters, it's got everything on it, it doesn't really come from Israel, it comes from Cyprus. I don't know what they were talking about. But assuming that it comes from Israel, like that's what it says in the bottle, so then the bracha achrona highlights that as well. You have to always be careful. It's not just because something looks like it came from Israel, doesn't always mean it comes from Israel. Some of you may be familiar with a lot of these greenhouse salads and all this stuff that used to originally be made in Gush Katif, that after Gush Katif, they were thrown out of Gush Katif, so they moved it to Shterot and to Ashkelon and other places. They were still producing a lot of this greenhouse kind of stuff. So if anyone ever eats this kind of stuff, may have noticed that recently the bags would say on them Alei Katif with Hebrew letters, and you think that you're supporting the Israeli economy. If you look in the back and you notice that it says they come from Mexico and from Guatemala, because apparently what happened is that they realized it was cheaper to grow these things there, so they sent the whole team from Shterot to Guatemala and to Mexico to build greenhouses there, and Kachava, so they're Mashgichim, they're Mamash, and it looks like it's coming right out of Eretz Israel, and the mice, it's not exactly what it's coming from. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy it. I think the Hashgacha is still very good on it. It still solves a lot of the checking and the bugs and a lot of other problems, but in terms of supporting the Israeli economy, you got to wonder whether you're exactly doing that. You may be supporting the Guatemalan economy. It's a wonderful thing also, but it's not exactly one of our goals in life necessarily at this point. So anyway, getting back to the story, so you have to, if you really have products that comes from Eretz Yisrael and it's Shivas Aminim, so then Taka the Bracha Achron is highlighted in the slightly nuanced, a slightly different Nusach HaBracha. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota, that why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go into Eretz Yisrael? What was the tremendous davens to the Rebbe Shlom Paschanan L'Hashem Beisi Lemor? I want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Why do you want to go into Eretz Yisrael? For the Gemara says, "V'chilecha mepiriyu tzarich." Moshe Rabbeinu wanted just to eat the fruit. That was his whole life dream to go eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, "No, that wasn't the reason. The reason why he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael was because he wanted to fulfill the mitzvahs that Luyus Baretz, Trumas, Meisrus, Shmit, etc., mitzvahs that he couldn't do in the Midbar. That's why he was plotting to go into Eretz Yisrael." So even though the Gemara, in a certain sense, makes a little bit light of the fact it doesn't mean that there's nothing significant about eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. It's a wonderful thing to eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. If Chazal changed the Nusach HaBrach of Ala Michi, of Ala Geffen, Ala Eitz, to highlight the fact that this fruit comes from Eretz Yisrael itself, so that's a wonderful thing. That is something which is positive, so we should look at that as a positive thing to try to buy Israeli produce whenever we can. However, we have to be careful when we, even though we encourage people to buy Israeli produce, one has to, of course, be very careful in terms of the proper mitzvah satluyas baretz. So that in and of itself is really a topic, a big topic. It's beyond the scope right now, but it's something to be aware of. Sometimes people take the attitude that I don't want to get involved in mitzvah satluyas baretz. Too complicated. I'd rather go buy the Mexican produce. So that's not always the correct approach, that we should try to perform the mitzvah satluyas baretz in whatever way we can. If we can't, if for whatever reason it's too difficult, then it's not going to happen and it's not feasible. So we have no right to violate the halachas of Tevel or Shemitah, or whatever the given halachas are. But if all else is equal, if we're able to, so then not only in terms of supporting the Israeli economy, which in and of itself is a wonderful thing, but in terms of being Nenef in the Paris Arts, that's a wonderful thing. Even though usually eating fruit that grew in Eretz Yisrael, it's hard to call that a mitzvah per se. It may be a nice thing, it may be a wonderful thing, maybe a nice, you know, a chesed with a chen of Yisrael, but to call it an actual mitzvah, it's hard to believe. But Sometimes there may be, at least according to some opinions, an actual mitzvah to eat peiros haaretz, and this is something which is still relevant during this time of the year. That's in terms of peiros of Shemitah. So the even though Shemitah is long gone already, it's been already 6 months since Rosh Hashanah almost, but many of the fruit which is in the market, both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, still has issues of Shemitah to it, particularly the fruit. The vegetables are pretty much over in terms of Shemitah, but at least the fresh vegetables, but the fruit is very much on the market. Most Israeli fruit that's on the market today, both in Eretz Yisrael and in America, would be issues. I didn't say problems, I didn't say sirim, I said issues in terms of Shemitah, because it's very simple that the fruit wasn't harvested until the summertime, and anything that was harvested this past summer grew during the Shnas HaShemitah, and it's still in season now. So let's say when you see Israeli oranges on the market, you see other Israeli fruit on the market, so that fruit is potentially an issue in terms of Shemitah. So we usually think, you know, a person hears about Shemitah, so their initial reaction is Shemitah, I don't want to eat this, I don't get anywhere near Shemitah, it's too complicated, too politically charged, too halachically charged, I don't want to touch it. So that's that may be true, that it's very halachically and politically charged, it may be true, but there is a certain dimension, at least according to some poskim, that there may actually be a mitzvah to eat peiros shviyas, things that grew during the Shemitah year. I'm leaving specifically out vegetables and grains, which are their own category in halach, which are not relevant anymore, but in terms of peiros or peiros ha'ilan, fruit which grew in a tree, there may actually be a special dimension of a mitzvah. The Torah says, "Vayis ha'shabbos ha'aretz lochem la'ochla," that you're supposed to eat the things that grew during the Shnas HaShemitah. So at least the way some achronim read Pshat and Ramban, that the Ramban says is actually a mitzvah. The Ramban actually claimed this is one of the Tayag mitzvahs to actively go ahead and to eat fruit that grew during Shemitah. Many others, the Chaznish included, held the Ramban didn't say it, and many disagree. So there is definitely a machlokus about this, but there are some who maintain that there's mamash a mitzvah to eat peiros shviyas. So if so, if I can't, we should all be running to the stores and buying up all the oranges. We should be buying up anything that we see that comes from Eretz Yisrael now, all the fruit, we should go run and have it. So not so simple, not so fast, for the following reason. That even though it's true that in theory there may be a mitzvah to eat the things that grew during the Shnas HaShemitah, this is true assuming that these fruit were treated appropriately, that the fruit were treated according to the halachos of Shemitah properly. If the fruit was not observed, the trees were not observed properly during the Shnas HaShemitah, the possible violations would be that the fruit wasn't declared to be hefker. The halacha is during Shemitah, all fruit is supposed to be let hefker. All produce, you're supposed to unlock all your orchards, let everybody, whoever wants to come, should come and take. So if that wasn't done properly, so there are some opinions that maintain that the fruit becomes usur, even b'diavad. The one would not be permitted to eat that fruit. That's what's called meshumar. So that's a big machlokus. Is meshumar a problem or not? Then there's another potential issue called ne'avad. If the trees are actually worked during the Shnas HaShemitah, does that have any effect on the fruit? So because of a variety of these combination of these problems, there were some poskim who said that if you have stomped fruit that you don't know was treated appropriately, so one should not eat such fruit. So there are different opinions about this in the poskim in Eretz Yisrael and in America. So if these two issues wouldn't be a problem, there would be no issue in terms of Meshumar, no issue in terms of Nevad, so then yeah, it would be a wonderful thing, that a person should try to eat as much fruit from the Shnas HaShemitah as possible. So many of you who have been in Eretz Yisrael over the last 6 months, the last year or so, may have bumped into this concept called Otzer Beis Din. Otzer Beis Din means that a person has a particular field in Eretz Yisrael and they want to observe the halachas of Shemitah. So if it's a fruit tree, it's fairly easy to observe Shemitah. You don't plant fruit trees every year. All of us who live in cities, so you plant vegetables every year, you plant grains every year. Fruit trees you plant once in the last 400 years. So you don't have to plant during the Shnas HaShemitah. All you have to do is declare everything's hefker and not work the tree. So if you do that, so then it's fine. So then it's wonderful. So then the fruit grows be kedusha. It has wonderful kedusha to it. And then you're allowed to eat it. And for ked, maybe mitzvah to eat it. The only small technical problem is you're not allowed to do business with it. You're not allowed to buy and sell. It becomes very, very complicated. So the halacha says that what you do is you leave your fields to be hefker and you hand over the rights to the Beis Din. Beis Din comes in and they take over the field and they take care of the purchasing. They're not really getting paid for the fruit. They're getting paid for their labor. Again, it's beyond the scope right now as to what's going on. Well, the details of Otzer Beis Din. But suffice it to say, in Eretz Yisrael today, you could still get Otzer Beis Din fruit or Otzer Beis Din wine, things which has kedusha shviyas to it. So if a person finds themselves in a situation to eat that, those kind of things, it's wonderful, gavaldik. We should encourage it, that it's according to some, at least it may actually be a mitzvah to do. So again, so eating proud to Shmir Eretz Yisrael under normal circumstances is a good thing. It's a positive thing. It gives us the opportunity to perform possibly mitzvah please baritz if done properly. But one should be careful. One shouldn't use it as an excuse to violate the mitzvah please baritz. One should be careful to observe the mitzvah please baritz properly. So find out the proper information, how to be mafresh trumas and maisus and shmita and all the associated halachas that come about with it. If one can overcome some of those barriers, so then one should be encouraged dafka to eat the peris which come from Eretz Yisrael and prove positive. You see, the Chazal instituted a special bracha, a special nuscha bracha, to emphasize the significance of kedushas haaretz, kedushas peris haaretz. There is it's not to say it's a minig, but there's a practice that exists in Eretz Yisrael today. I remember when I was a little kid, so they used to encourage us when I was in elementary school, planting trees in Israel on Tu B'Shvat. So that became like a new halach. You have to mechuyev min haTorah to plant trees in Eretz Yisrael. I remember when I was a kid, so they used to hand out all these big brochures, and the brochures would say in it the following pasuk: Ki savol la'aretz unetatem kol eitz. So as little kids, we thought this is one of the Tariq mitzvahs, that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you mechuyev to plant trees. That's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says Ki savol la'aretz unetatem kol eitz, the araltem or los was period. That means the Torah says when you come to Eretz Yisrael and you plant trees, you have to observe the mitzvahs of Orla. The Torah doesn't say to plant trees. It says when you plant trees, then you keep the mitzvahs of Orla. You're not allowed to eat the fruit for the first 3 years. But again, it was a publicity gimmick to try to get people to plant trees. So good. So it's a wonderful thing to plant trees in Eretz Yisrael. It's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's Gevald Kol HaKavod. However, sometimes it can get a little bit complicated, namely this past year. So last Tu B'Shvat was a big issue in Eretz Yisrael, because to plant trees, well, you're going to have everybody plant trees, so everyone's going to violate the Shemitah year by planting trees. So that wasn't an option. So I think a lot of the planting that usually takes place on Maas and Tu B'Shvat does not take place during the Shnasa Shemitah. So it happens to be that last year I had a fascinating phone call which was involved in the Shad. I'll tell you just a little bit of the background. It was a very moving phone call. So last year I had this chus to take 20 bachurim from the yeshiva during the little break during the winter Vena semesters. So I took 20 bachurim to Eretz Yisrael to learn the halachas of Shemitah. So we spent 1 week, the whole morning seder, learning in the Beis Medrash in Gruz while he was at campus. And then in the afternoon, we went around to different places to see Shemitah Mamash firsthand. So one day they took us to a greenhouse. Those were the old days when they used to plant the green. They didn't take us to Guatemala. They took us to the Shderot. So we got to see the greenhouses there. We got to see the Esrogim orchards with the Elzer Beisdins. Every day was another phenomenal trip. It was absolutely amazing. So in one day, we were in Ashkelon, in a greenhouse. Mamash, we were watching the greenhouse, the Shah's in the greenhouse, Machloikis, about certain things you're allowed to do in a greenhouse, and not allowed to do in a greenhouse. Again, it gets very, very complicated. We're not learning the Dinah Shmita right now. But I was Mamash in the greenhouse with the Bachar from Yeshiva, and we were looking at what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, what we can do and help, etc. And then I get a phone call. I got a phone call from my wife's uncle, who lives in Matastov. And he called me that he had just gotten a phone call from somebody else on behalf of a not yet religious school in Eretz Yisrael that wanted to know what could they do with their kids on Tu B'Shvat this year. Again, this was not a frum school. They wanted to know what could they do with their kids on Tu B'Shvat. They heard something about greenhouses, something about the chamamot. You're allowed to do certain things in the greenhouses. They wanted to know, can they go and plant trees in a green? That was the shaila. So this was the triangle, that it went from some non-religious school in Eretz Yisrael, went through Matastov, came to through YU. YU got into everything, and I got through YU in the greenhouse in Ashkelon. So I had to try to paskin for this school. So I was talking with Pupli over the phone about what to do with. So I was just fascinated. Like, I was like pinching myself. Like it was amazing that here, Baruch Hashem, we've reached a point where Tzvamish Kimitzion takes the Torah that asking shailas. People want to know. People who are not yet quite from. They want to know how can we keep Shemitah at least to some degree, and what do we do at least in some appropriate way. So Baruch Hashem, we had a schus. Me and the Bachim in the yeshiva, we had a schus to be able to participate in this Masa Matan Shal Halacha. So it's interesting that that was the last day of the trip. So I was going back to the airport that evening, and I forgot about it. Somebody called me, and then President Joel called me, and I was on the phone with him on the way back to the airport. So he asked me, in one sentence, sum up how the trip go. So I said, President Joel, you won't believe this. I said, let me just tell you what happened in the greenhouse in Ashkelon. So he was blown away. He was so excited that he said that, wow, that the, why you paskin the Shiloh from the greenhouse, and the, why you trip in Matastor for that. He was, it was gewaldic. He was mamish blown away. So it was a very, very meaningful story. But anyway, getting back to the story. So one shouldn't be planting during the Shnas HaShemitah in greenhouses. Maybe yeah, maybe no. But one shouldn't be planting during the Shnas HaShemitah. So now the Shemitah's year is over. Everyone can go back to perform the mitzvah and the tatem kolets machal, whatever the mitzvah is, if it is. So if you want to plant trees in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem Tov Aleichem Bracha. It's a wonderful opportunity to be involved in the mitzvah of Yishuv HaAretz. The real meaning of that pasuk, the tatem kolets machal, is in fact that there's a prohibition of orla, that one is not allowed to eat fruit during the first 3 years of when it grows. In the fourth year, one has to becomes kodesh, one has to be polded. It becomes a little bit complicated, but for the first 3 years, so anything that grows is taka also. It's also bechila, also bano. One is not allowed to use it whatsoever. So interestingly enough, the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that this halacha applies in Chutz Laaretz also. This halacha is not unique to Eretz Yisrael. It applies different from Shemit and Jerusalem Eisrus. This applies even in Chutz Laaretz. So if a person plants a tree in their own backyard in the Tinek, so they have to be aware that for the first 3 years one is not permitted to eat the fruit. The Gemara is a very, very chiddush tikka halacha. The Gemara tells us is that in Chutz La'aretz, if you don't know that it's orla, if you're not sure where it's coming from, you don't have to worry about it. In Suffolk, orla and Chutz La'aretz is mutar, and you don't even have to ask. As long as you don't know, if you know b'vados that it's orla, if you know for certain that it's orla, then you're not allowed to eat it. What you don't know doesn't hurt you. It's a very, very strange halacha. That's the Gemara says, halacha Moshe Messina. Again, a whole sugya in the end of the first back of Kiddushin. So you would think, when does this ever happen? Whoever has such a crazy, wacky shayla, so I tend to... The wacky shalas tend to come, you know, when you look around for them, they tend to find you. So, when we lived in Paramus, so we had very, very nice neighbors. Next door neighbors weren't Jewish, and they were big, like, planting freaks. They were always planting everything natural, and everything was gewaldic. So we used to get tomatoes and peppers and all kind of stuff there, cucumbers, everything they were always planting in their garden and giving to us. Gewaldic, wonderful. So one day, they came by and they said, oh, we're so excited. We just planted this new bush. And it just gave off all these berries, and we'd love to share the berries with you. So a bush is a tree, basically, for all practical purposes. The berries are fruit. And they just told me they just planted this bush just now, last year or so. So this was Mamash Orlas Chutz Laaretz. Orlas Chutz Laaretz is Taka Asar. So in the course of the conversation, it came out that some of the fruit was from last year's bush, some of it was from old bushes. They weren't even sure themselves. So I said, oh, Safik Orlas Chutz Laaretz. Safik Orlas Chutz Laaretz is Mutter. So who would have ever thought in a million years that we would actually pass in a Shaila based on Safik Orlas Chutz Laaretz? I was so excited. Then as the years went on, I got a couple of other shiles that suffered all those Chutz Laaretz. The guy planted this here, he doesn't remember when he planted it, it came from here, from there, whole stories. So the bottom line is, if you ever plant trees, so if you're ever in the business of planting trees, so you should be aware of the fact that even in Chutz Laaretz, these halachas apply. So we try to give a little bit of just an overview about related to B'Shvat, fruit, planting, things which are the Inyan, B'Osu Inyan, some halachas, some a little bit more common, some a little less common, which tend to come our way. There's one last thing I just wanted to speak about just for a moment, and that's a little bit b'inyani machshava, a little bit b'inyani hashkafa. So when I originally saw that, when my wife originally asked me a couple of weeks ago what I was going to speak about, so I said, okay, I'll speak about inyani dioma. That's like always. That's always a neutral topic. Inyana Diyoma. Then I realized it's the first week of Shvat. There's absolutely no Inyana Diyoma. So I talk about. So we're talking. I said, okay, you know what? I'll talk about the Tu B'Shvat. So she said, okay, what should we name the Shiur? So I said, we'll call it Halachic Issues in Tu B'Shvat. So she says, nah, got to add a little flavor to it. Okay, Halachic and Hashkafic Issues in Tu B'Shvat. That sounds great. Okay, good. So I was thinking to myself at the time, okay, if a Halach, I could ramble on for a half hour. What am I going to talk about? Hashkafic in Tu B'Shvat. I figured, all right, it was 5 weeks down the line. I'll think about it in the next 5 weeks, what we could talk about. So then the other night, when she showed me the topic of the Shiur, so apparently the word Hashkafic got lost in the process. I think it just said halachic issues of Tu B'Shvat. I said, Baruch Hashem, now I don't have to talk about Hashkafic anymore. I can just talk about halacha. But then I realized, you know, it's not fair. Just because it got deleted on the printer or something on the computer, I should at least talk about it. So I'll talk about it for a minute. I'll talk about it a little bit. Just one nakud, at least one machshava to walk away with based on some of the things that we spoke about. The Gemara has a fascinating drasha on this pasuk, this famous pasuk that we mentioned already several times, Eretz Chitos, Ora, Begefen, Otein, Abrimov, the beautiful, wonderful fruit of Eretz Yisrael, the Shivas Aminim, Sheshtachem, Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara is an amazing Darasha. The Gemara appears, some of you may remember, from Brachas, from Erevin, from Sukkah, a few places, the same Gemara. The Gemara says as follows. Eretz Chita, what does it mean that Eretz Yisrael is a land of wheat? So the Gemara says wheat doesn't really mean wheat. What wheat means is, there's a halacha, that if a person eats a certain amount of a wheat and in a house which has tzaras in it, so the halacha is such and such and such. That's what Eretz Chita means. Okay? Interesting. Then, what does Sa'ora mean? Sa'ora means, if you have a bone the size of a barley bean, it's potentially tame. That's what Sa'ora means. And what does Geffen mean? Geffen means, a din in Huchas Naziros, if you have a grape and a wine, every one of the Shivas Aminim, the Gemara pins on some halacha, that this teaches me halacha Nuchas Shabbos, and this teaches me halacha Nuchas Yom Kippur, and this teaches me halacha Nuchas Tum Vatar. Every one of the Shivas Aminim, the Gemara takes and pins on some technical, very, very technical halacha. What is a game? We know what Chita Sa'ora V'Geffen Tainer. We know exactly what all these things mean. What kind of game is that? That Chita corresponds to this halacha, and Sa'ora corresponds to that halacha, and this corresponds to Yenam halacha. We know exactly what these things mean. They mean beautiful fruit of Eretz Yisrael. Why do you have to go and look for complicated, convoluted halachas of Huchas Tumim V'Tahara to connect to the fruit? There is a fascinating insight at the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi was Rav Yosher Ben Soloveitchik, the first one, before the Rav. He was the Rav Chaim's father, the Rav's great-grandfather. There's a fascinating insight at the Beis Halevi in this week's parasha. We say the pasuk many times, we say it particularly in Pesach, but the pasuk in Parshas Bo, V'gadot ol b'incha b'yom ulema ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisim b'mitzrayim. That we say to at the Seder, so ba'avur zeh of course refers to the Pesach, to the Matzah Moror, because of the Pesach Matzah Moror, Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. So do we ever stop and ask ourselves, what does that pasuk mean? Because of Pesach Matzah Moror, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. There's a very real problem in that pasuk. The order is reversed. The chicken's before the egg. What it should be is ba'avur shehotziyani mimitzrayim ani ochel pesach matzah morah. It sounds like it's the cause before the effect, the effect before the cause. It should be first came Yetzias Mitzrayim, that after Yetzias Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us significant mitzvahs to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is the meaning of the reversal of the pasuk? So the Beis Halevi says that this pasuk is alluding to a truth that Chazal tell us. The Zohar HaKadosh tells us that first the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the Torah, HaKadosha. He wrote the Torah way before the world was created. Istakol b'araisa bar alma. After he wrote the Torah, then and only then did he create the world. What is the significance of that statement, that the Torah precedes the world? So the Beis Halevi explains that we sometimes think that the mitzvahs of Torah are a response to the realities of this world. Namely, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world, a very nice world, a world with an esrog tree, and a world with a lulav tree, and a world with animal skins for tefillin. And then, now that we have all these nice things in the world, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, you know what? Let's take all these things and we'll use them for mitzvahs. So we got it all wrong. We got it totally backwards. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create an esrog tree? Because in the world of Ruchnius, there was already a mitzvah, l'kachtam l'chem b'yamarishan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to take this tree, to take this mitzvah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this mitzvah. The Torah preceded the world. The esrog tree was created so that we should have the opportunity to do the mitzvah. Everything in this world was created to be able to do the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem comes first, and the reality of Olam HaZeh comes afterwards. Says the Beis Halevi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a grandiose plan. He wanted that his people should eat Pesach Matzah Morah on the 15th night of Nisan. That was the plan. So go and tell people, okay guys, 15th night of Nisan, everyone eat Pesach Matzah Morah. Why? What does that have to do with us? You know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did? He orchestrated Yetzias Mitzrayim. The whole Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole events of Yetzias Mitzrayim were done in such a way that Pesach should mean something for us, Matzah should mean something for us, and Morah should mean something for us. It's not the other way around. It's not that there was once a historical event called Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then a couple thousand years later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know what, let's remember what happened. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought these events about, all of history played out, to enable us to do the mitzvahs, to do the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ba'avur zeh. In order to do matzah maror, asa Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. So I think that's what Chazal are telling us about the fruit, the trees, the sheva mitzvah, the sheva saminim, shnei shtabcha b'hem Eretz Yisrael. The mitzvahs come first. that there was a concept of Hilchos Tumah, and there's a concept of Hilchos Shabbos, and there's a concept of Hilchos Yom Kippurim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world, made the physical world, so that we could use everything in the physical world to serve Him. But it's not the other way around. It's not that the physical world comes first, and then, oh, by the way, we're going to use that for Avodas Hashem. Once it's here, let's already make good use of it. No, its whole purpose is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Once it's here, you can enjoy the rimon. You can enjoy the good-tasting fruit. Once it's here, you can eat the bread. But the purpose of the bread is not to enjoy the bread. The purpose of the bread is to be able to wash and bench and to say, Mosei Lechem and Aretz. The purpose of the zayas, of the olive, is to be able to crush it up and make it into oil and light the menorah. The purpose of every single tree, every single entity in the physical world, is in order to use for Avodas Hashem. To such an extent that the Mefarshim say in Parshas Bereishis, when the Kadosh Baruch Hu creates the sun and the moon, so if I would ask most people, take a survey and ask them, what's the primary role of the sun? So they'd give you a whole scientific explanation. You need the sun, it gives warmth, it gives light, it gives energy. That's why Hashem created the sun. So the answer is absolutely not. That is not the reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu created the sun. If you'd ask a person, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu create the moon? So they give you a story with the tides, with the lunar, with this, where they give you a whole astronomy lesson, why Kadosh Baruch Hu created the moon? What's the purpose of the moon? Absolutely not. I just opened up Parshas Bereishis and I'll tell you why Kadosh Baruch Hu created the sun and the moon. The Torah says, V'hayu la'osos ulemoadim ulyamim v'shanim. The purpose of the sun and the moon is for osos v'yamim muadim v'shanim, so that we can have days and months and years. Who cares what month it is? Who cares what year it is? We have to have Rosh Chodesh, we have to have Pesach, we have to have Rosh Hashanah, we have to have Shavuos. We can't have Yomim Tovim, we can't have a cycle, we can't have a year without Yomim Mishanim, we can't have that without the Shemesh and the Areach. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the whole heavens, so that we should have mitzvahs. By the way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, once they're already here, what does the next pasuk say? V'hayulim aros b'kiyah shemayim. You can enjoy them also, you can get light from it. That's okay, you can use the moon for light, you can use the sun for light, if you understand that that's not the primary purpose. If you think that the purpose of this world is for your enjoyment, purely for your enjoyment, for no other reason, so then you got the whole creation backwards, you got all of Bria's Island backwards. It's yamim v'shanim, it's mitzvah satayr, it's avedis Hashem, that's what matters, that's what counts, and once you're here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets you enjoy it. You can have a good time on the way. But if your primary goal is not in Ruchnius, then you missed the boat. So that's what Chazal mean with the Shiva Saminim also. If you come into Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us a beautiful land. Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. Tu B'Shvat is a wonderful, beautiful time where it's the beginning of the springtime, rejuvenation, the natural world. Everything's coming back again. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful world out there. But what's the mindset? It's a beautiful world, therefore eat, drink, and be merry because we're just having a good time. If that's the mindset, then you missed the boat. Then you missed Tu B'Shvat, you missed the boat. But if the mindset is, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us fruit so we can take this fruit and recite a bar parades on it, recite a Shechionu, or according to Ramayisha, not recite a Shechionu, whatever the case may be. We use it for mitzvahs, we observe Orlach, the Shashviyas, Tumas and Maestras. We use the beautiful world for the mitzvahs of Hashem Yisbarach, so then along the way, we can enjoy the world as well. So hopefully we should see in our day the Maimah Chazal, the most beautiful Maimah Chazal, about the real true significance of the B'Shvat. When the Gemara says in the end of Masechah Sanhedrin that the way to really know that the Geula is on the way is when the barren trees of Eretz Yisrael begin to give forth fruit. For thousands of years, there were no fruit trees in Eretz Yisrael. It was a wasteland. It was a desert. And now, Baruch Hashem, we've been zeich in our generation to have the Jaff oranges, to have the pomegranates, to have the dates, to have the wonderful Paris Aretz. Hopefully, that should be the simen muvok that Eretz Hashem, the Geula is on the way. Sure.
Something you mentioned at the very beginning, Dr. Ramosha says that why should we get excited anymore